All right, we started a new three-part sermon series last week. We were calling it Going Meta. We're just talking about some of the elements of our Sunday service and why we do what we do. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about why we sing in church. And so obviously this isn't going to cover everything. You could probably do a whole dissertation on that. But I just want to give us a general framework. And then Daniel's going to teach a class this fall online about reconstructing worship. I think it's a five-parter that he's putting together. So keep your eyes open for that if that piques your interest. I almost asked Beth to preach this sermon with me because she is more than qualified to talk about music. But just, you know, she's like very part-time and she has a growing business that she's running. And so I thought, okay, I'll have her preach when I give her a little more runway time. But I in no way wanted to, like, Daniel and I, doing all the music stuff is in no way because she's not qualified to do it. She absolutely is. You can always pick her brain. So one of my closest friends has been dating a music teacher, right? So he teaches marching band and choir and some other things. And he was away last week at band camp and he was leading the pit players. So if you're not a marching band nerd, like the pit is like the percussion instruments that you can't march with, right? So like the mallet instruments, the gong, proud gong player, the timpani, and those things are like up front. And so I was like, oh, trying to connect with them. I'm like, I did pit for a couple of years in high school. They recruited me because I played piano. So they're like, oh, you could easily play like the marimba and stuff. So I did that. I thought it was really fun. But then my other friend, she looked at me and she kind of had this wry look on her face. And she's like, man, we humans, we just love to like walk around with sticks and make music, don't we? She's like, I just imagine from the time that we were allowed to like pick up sticks, we're just picking up sticks and making music, sitting around our campfires and banging out a beat. And like a million years later, here we are still doing it. And I thought, oh, that's something kind of true about that, right? There's something really primal about it. Like have stick, we'll sing. And we don't know exactly when it is that humans started to sing, but we do know that that lives deep in our history. And that whenever people have gathered, we've made music, right? And we've sung while we work, and we've sung to our kids, and we sing at weddings and funerals and other rituals, and we sing to remember stories together, like the Iliad and the Odyssey were sung. Large parts of the Bible were probably sung. We sing to celebrate victories, right? We are the champions, my friends. And we've certainly sung to God. And we see people writing music or breaking out in song all over the scriptures. Right after the Hebrew people had crossed the Red Sea or the Sea of Reeds, Moses just started to sing. And then his sister Miriam went and took out a tambourine. And it says the rest of the women followed her lead and they started singing and dancing together. And Hannah sung and David sang. And he sang a lot from the time he was a shepherd all the way through when he was a leader. And we know the Psalms are all songs, and the prophets would break out into poetry now and again that would probably have been sung. When Mary learned that she was going to bear Jesus, she responded to that news with a song. My soul magnifies the Lord, the great Magnificat. The book of Revelation imagines this great multitude of humans and angels gathered around the throne of God singing. And in perhaps every culture, in every time, in every place, humans have found that connecting with the divine makes us want to sing. And even as I wrote that sentence, so I'm going to go meta on my meta here, right? I'm writing that sentence. I kept hearing the old Quaker hymn in my head, how can I keep from singing? And you might know that one. You might not. You might remember it because Enya remade it some years ago. So that dates me a little bit. But the hymn's in your notes. It's, my life flows on an endless song above earth's lamentation. I catch the sweet though far off hymn that hails a new creation. Through all the tumult and the strife, I hear the music ringing. It finds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? All right, so the Christian imagination here is that all of creation is part of a cosmic song, right? That music underlies our existence and that our lives contain a melody that weaves into this larger symphony of the universe, which in a way we can measure that sound, right? We know that the universe emits waves that translate to a B flat, 57 octaves below middle C, so far below what we can actually hear, but the universe does actually have like a bass note underlying it. And our Christian siblings in the Eastern Orthodox churches, they imagine that when we're singing music, it's happening not only in our reality, but we're also singing into the heavenly dimensions, into the dimensions of time and space that we can't access in these bodies. And that we here on earth, we're joining with this heavenly song when we sing together on Sundays. And so that's why the entirety of an Eastern Orthodox service, if you ever attend one, it's either sung or chanted. And it's believed that in that, that the boundaries of time and space dissipate and that we're joined together as one people, the people who came before us and are already now in the heavenly dimensions, which are represented by icons. They have far more icons in an Eastern Orthodox church. We have a little taste of that in that we have the candles that we light. So on either side, sometimes people light a candle as a prayer. They're also there if you'd like to light them in remembrance of someone who's gone before you, which I do every week. And then the imagination is that that those who have gone before us are here with us in this service, joining us and bearing witness, right? So it's the people who have gone before us as well as the people who will come after us, all joining in the cosmos in what they call the liturgy of heaven. And so if you have a little mystical bent and that's an interesting picture for you, we might say that humans make music because we're created to make music. And that helps us transcend the limits of our current state and join this wider reality. Now, some of you might be like, okay, well, I mean, that's kind of cool. It's also kind of weird. I don't know. I have a more practical bent. And so for those of us that are more like that, I'm going to use a story from Acts chapter 16 to help us unpack this question, why do we sing on Sundays? So in this story, the Apostle Paul and his friend Silas, who was also a church leader, they'd gotten themselves into some trouble, right? So they'd gone to this town and they interrupted the business dealings of some prominent men, right? And you don't want to interrupt the crooked business dealings of some crooked men. And that got them badly beaten and thrown in jail. So this is from Acts 16. It says, the crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. And after they'd been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. And when he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell, and he fastened their feet in the stocks. And about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. All right, so it's midnight, and they're hurting, and they're locked up, and they're not sure what's going to happen to them. And so they start singing. And when I put myself in that place in my head, I start to wonder. And it's like the wondering questions that we ask the kids down in Sunday school every week, right? I wonder. I thought, I wonder, what did those songs give them in that moment? Right? Because Paul and Silas almost certainly weren't sitting there like writing brand new songs and composing there with their feet in the stocks. Whatever it was that they sang that night, someone had given them those songs along the way. Right, they had learned them somewhere. They'd heard other people singing them. They had probably sung them together with friends or fellow believers many times. And then they had carried those words and those melodies around with them until on a night when they needed them, the songs were already there. And we know that God is always greater than the last thing we said about God. Right? We can never quite capture the transcendence of God in language, but songs give us like words and sound that is like spacious enough to help us expand and to hold time and space and multiple experiences of the divine. I think, okay, what do I mean by that? So like, for example, if I make a theological statement, like I can stand up here and just say, God is faithful, right? God is faithful to me. God is faithful to you. I know this about God, and that's great. But a song gives us great as thy faithfulness. I'm going to ask you guys to do something. I'm going to ask you to sing the chorus of that with me if you know it. It's in the lyrics or in the thing. So here we go. Great is thy faithfulness. Great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, thy hand hath provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. Well done. right? And suddenly, that idea has breath in it. And not only breath, it's got togetherness, and it has all of us, and it has everything that we bring into it, and it has the witness of the communion of the saints all around us, and it has the voices of the people who sang it before us. Maybe you remember your parents singing it, or your grandparents singing it, or Crystal singing it as we did the online during all during COVID, and she did all the hymns, right? And you can think, you know, I don't often go around thinking to myself, God is so faithful to me. But man, when we sing Great is Thy Faithfulness, I certainly sing that for like 2 weeks after we do it. I'm walking around the house singing Great is Thy Faithfulness. When I met Rachel, this is 12, 13 years ago now, I wasn't sure how my parents were going to respond to this. Turns out they were just fine, so that was great. But at our wedding, we chose Great is Thy Faithfulness as one of our songs. And some of you were even there, right? My dad, who was sick with Parkinson's, he had both of his hands up, just worshiping God, his eyes closed. And I will just never forget that picture, right? And Rachel and I wanted that song at our wedding because we felt like God had been faithful to us. And each of us had these long roads of coming out. And we knew that God was faithful to us in how we found each other. We felt like God was faithful to us when our church communities couldn't quite handle it. The bright, bright light of our cosmic love. And that God wasn't just faithful to us, but like to all of us, to anybody who's been part of this community, either before and after, right? That this is the people who have created a faith community that can handle both inclusion and some disagreement about some things, right? God's faithful. And so I can stand here and I can say God is faithful and I mean it, but man, when I sing, Great is Thy Faithfulness, I'm carrying all that memory and I'm carrying all that witness of God's goodness, right? It brings up more. And maybe it's not that song for you, you know, but there's probably a song or two that acts like that for you, right? A song that's like gathered things into itself over the years. And it's got people and places and grief and gratitude and maybe times where you've been questioning God or maybe you had an experience of God while you were singing. And it might not even be a quote-unquote Christian song, but maybe it's just one that makes you think of God. And then I wonder if something similar was happening for Paul and for Silas on that night in a jail cell. Right? I know that they didn't like preach each other a little sermon to encourage each other. I mean, as much as I love a good sermon, right? They sang. And we don't know what songs or hymns that they sang, but I would bet good money that that music carried something more for them. Memories and stories and church services and prayer meetings and thoughts of friends with whom they had sung these together. And it probably carried people's faith, right? We can carry one another's faith for each other. You can be like, man, I'm just not feeling my usual optimistic self today. You know, like one of them, like I'm in a jail cell. But you know what? I know that my grandma's praying for me or my brother or my good friend, right? That's somebody else helping carry our faith for us and with us. And so these songs gave Paul and Silas language for faith and comfort and for exhortation that they didn't have to invent at midnight in that jail cell. I want to press this just a little bit further here because I think the Psalms provide a really good example of what I'm trying to say. Right, so for centuries, actually more than a millennia, the Psalms have acted as both the songbook and a prayer book for both Jews and Christians. And they express a whole wide range of emotions of the human experience. And some of them are right back to back with each other saying something completely different, right? The Lord, if you want to look on your notes, I've got these here. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted, says Psalm 34. But then, why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Right, so God's both far away, but also near. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Next to, O Lord, you've searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You know me super well, versus I feel abandoned. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, right? This expression of trust. The heavens declare the glory of God. Awe, right? We're giving language to emotion here. Out of the depths I cry to you, pain. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. gratitude. Like my memory there is my dad waking me up on Sunday mornings, playing with his guitar. This is the day that the Lord, and some of you know it, right? Oh my gosh. My God, why have you forsaken me? Right? Maybe that's the thing there. Let everything that has breath praise the Lord, joy and solidarity with creation, right? All of these voices live together in the same collection, which means that over a lifetime of praying and singing, either from the Psalms or when we're singing different songs about our experiences of life and of God at church, sometimes we find ourselves singing words that describe exactly where we are, and sometimes we're singing words that belong to an experience we're not having at all. And there'll be days when this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. And it rises so instinctively from inside of us. And then there'll be mornings when out of the depths I cry to you is closer to our truth. And there'll be mornings when neither of those is ours, but maybe it's someone else's experience that day. And when we sing together, I'm no longer singing out of my own experience of God. I'm singing alongside your experience of God. So singing lets us inhabit a faith that is larger than our own individual experience. And I wonder if that was happening in that prison cell too, that maybe Paul was singing something that Silas needed to hear, or maybe Silas was carrying something that Paul couldn't carry that night. We don't know. But Acts gives us this fun little detail. It says other prisoners were listening. And so maybe Paul and Silas were singing words that someone else in those cells needed to hear. Maybe they were singing something that somebody had been praying, God, send some encouragement my way. And then all of a sudden, these two dudes are just like belting out hymns. And those songs that Paul and Silas carried, they belong to a tradition that is much larger than themselves. And so do ours. Right? We inherit other people's expressions of God. Right? We inherit other people's metaphors and other people's encounters with God and their stories and their testimonies and their songs. Christian music has been accumulating for centuries. Right? We've got ancient chants and we've got African American spirituals and we've got Bach cantatas and we've got Aretha Franklin and we've got hymns and taze and church camp songs and yeah, contemporary Christian worship music. You know, there's some form of that. Actually, when I was living in China, I learned about a woman called Lu Xiaomen. And I don't know if any of you have heard of her, but she is a prolific contemporary, more kind of folk music, but Christian contemporary composer. She's written more than 1,800 worship songs and is still writing. And so she's Huizhou, which is an ethnic minority there. There are quite a few Hui people where I was studying. And so I'd heard of some of her songs when I was worshiping with different believers in China. And they told me all about her. But the church that I went to on Sundays for 2 years was one of, they call it from the underground church. So it's the illegal churches that meet there. We'd like switch around sometimes which apartments we were in on different Sundays so that we couldn't be tracked. Right. So for 2 years, I spent Sunday mornings worshiping with them. And they sang mostly hymns. Right. And so they would sing hymns, but they were in Mandarin. And so the thing was, is I spoke better Chinese than I read. Right? So like I could go and sort of understand what's going on and worship with people, but then they'd be singing hymns and I'd recognize it and they'd hand me the lyrics, but in Chinese characters. I was like, I don't know. So if I knew the hymn, I would just sing in English alongside the Mandarin, which was like kind of a beautiful way to connect. And one of the songs I remember singing pretty regularly was Amazing Grace. Right? And so there we are. We're singing a song that was written centuries earlier, halfway around the world. And you may know Amazing Grace carries a complicated story, right? So the composer, John Newton, he'd been the captain of a slave trading ship. And he eventually, it took a while in his life, he eventually became an abolitionist, right? And so we know that hymn, it reminds us of the absolute scandal of God's grace. Anyway, no matter what we've done, no matter where we've been, no matter who we are, we could be doing the worst things in the world, but you know what? God's grace is still there for us. And forgiveness is still offered to us, and we are still worthy of God's love. It also reminds us that God's grace doesn't let us just keep on doing the old things we were doing, but God's grace compels us to change our ways and to transform our hearts into response and to work for justice. And that song carries that story. And it's a song that's traveled far beyond John Newton, who was over in London. It's traveled and it's borne witness to God's grace and transformation across continents and cultures and generations, because believers recognize something that resonates and feels true about God. Songs move from one person to another. They move from one community to another. They move from one century to another, and they accumulate meaning as they go. So our tradition contains songs that came out of monasteries and songs that came out of the great revivals and songs that came out of enslaved communities and songs that came out of the civil rights movement, songs that have been written by mystics and theologians and pastors and people whose names we will never know. And so one tradition might teach us to sing about the grandeur and the mystery of God, right? It makes you think of the great cathedrals, which even the architecture would sort of lift you up and bring you into this place of awe. Another tradition might teach you intimacy with God. And I would argue that's what contemporary worship music is actually really good at doing, that that's part of the contribution of it, is that relational element with God. Another gives us songs of liberation or contemplative repetition or praise and celebration. I was just listening in, you know, we're part of TFAM, and I was listening to their leadership conference, and one of the speakers ended by just saying, you know what, God is so good, like there is no other way to respond to this but to celebrate and praise, and like leading everybody in just like a thanksgiving. Right? Some give us lament, and some give us like theological poetry. You know, if you're a person who just loves hymns and you feel like you can get something out of that for decades. And every generation receives this enormous treasury of music, and we add something to it and we pass it along. And that brings me back to Paul and Silas. Somebody put those songs into them. Some community somewhere had sung enough that that music had become part of them. And then one night they found themselves sitting in the dark, and they discovered that they were carrying something that they needed. Singing helps make a community. It gives us a shared repertoire. And week after week, without even realizing it, we're putting songs into a common treasury, right? Into like a common pot. And some of the songs we love immediately. Some of them grow on us slowly. And some of them we will never like. And some come from theological traditions that are a little bit different than our own, and so we might not love the lyrics, but the church has a wide array of orthodoxy, right? Some introduce us to an experience of God that we haven't had ourselves, and some become connected to moments in our lives that haven't even happened yet. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things that we're doing for each other on Sunday mornings, right? We're teaching each other songs for futures that we haven't experienced yet. Now, so in this room, we might be singing words today that don't feel especially important to us, but maybe 5 years from now, those words might return to us in a time when we need them. Or one of you may not quite believe the words that you're singing today, but maybe the person 3 chairs down just like needs those words desperately. And someone might be singing out of joy, and somebody else might be borrowing that joy, and someone might be singing out of grief, and by singing along with them, the rest of us are helping them carry that grief. Right, the church's song has always been much bigger than the experience of any one person in the room. Right, I've worshiped with churches all around the world, right, with mega churches in Korea and house churches up in northern India and East Africa, cathedrals. I actually did high mass in St. Peter's Basilica for the Pope with my college choir. I've danced around and sung in an orphanage in Haiti. I've been with the illegal church gatherings in East Africa, well, in a few places, and in China. But sometimes I recognize a song that's being sung, but most of the time I don't, right? But everywhere you go, the church is singing. Most of the time I don't speak the local language, and so I just worship with whatever I have available in whatever way I can. And sometimes the musicians are terrible, and sometimes they're incredible. And it doesn't matter, because what matters is that we're coming together and we're giving each other this gift, right? And so there's places where I've been asked to teach some songs, and in other places, I've been the receiver of having been taught a song. And then that song travels around the world with me, right? And it's a way that the global church is sharing their gifts with one another. I wasn't sure if I was going to share this one, but why? This is kind of an example of that. So when I was studying in China, I met some Koreans who had written a song, and then they translated that song into Amdo Tibetan. And then I was out in this Tibetan monastery for a few weeks, and the nuns there, they just wanted to sing this song over and over and over again. It was every day. And so my friend would just pull out her guitar, and we'd start to sing this song. And it means, you are a person chosen to receive God's love. So in your life is the greatest love of all. Even before the creation of the world, God loved us. And through our fellowship with one another, the fruit of love grows. Because you are in this world, we experience peace and joy without measure. You're a person who was born to receive the love of God. So right now, receive even more of this unending love, right? It's beautiful. And obviously, I don't teach that here because we don't sing Amdo. Although I did sing it over the kids at VBS at our former place of employment. But you know who I do sing it over? Babies. My youngest two nieces, I knew this song by then, and I would just hold them, and I'd walk around. Chonas Showy, Shamba Chobi Sharon Dunbi, Mayan Shan, Chujatsui Nanda Pansenso Bi Shamba Yo. Walk around, Adam and Andrea's two little kids, I would hold them and sing that song in their ear. Our friend just had a baby, Willa, and they're in the corner brewery just singing this over her. You know what? That is a gift from some Korean believers via some Amdo Tibetan people, via me, and a blessing that's coming to those kids around the world. And that is part of the blessing of singing in church. And we sing these words that come from different centuries and cultures and different theological traditions. And somewhere along the way, a song becomes ours without us even realizing it. Right? And something happens. You find yourself one day, and maybe you're sitting in your own midnight. Maybe you've reached a dark night of the soul, and then a line comes back. It is well with my soul. Right? And then a melody. And then another line. And then suddenly you discover that somebody gave you the words for this moment years before you knew you would even need them. And I wonder if that's what was going on there with Paul and Silas. They're sitting in that innermost cell with their feet in the stocks, their bodies aching in the dark of the night, settling in around them. And they reached into this treasury that they had been given, and they're singing, and the other prisoners are listening. And so that's what we're doing Sunday. We're receiving these songs from people who came before us, and we're giving language to experiences of God that are bigger than any one of us. And we're putting words and melodies into one another that might someday become prayer for us. And we don't know what songs we're going to need, and we don't know when we're going to need them. So we sing. All right. It was a little bit longer, but I'd like to take just a moment here. We often have silence or guided meditation. And I thought, let's just take a minute or two of silence. People make noise. But let's just sit before God, and maybe you could remember some of the songs that have been gifted to you, that have been tools for you. And we'll just sit with gratitude before God.
God, we thank you so much for the inheritance that we've received with this treasure trove of music and traditions that we have access to and that teach us just a little bit more of who you are and how other people have experienced you through the ages. I ask, Lord, that you would continue to weave those into our hearts and so we can access those parts of you at those times in our lives when we most need to remember who you are and to receive comfort or to express praise. We thank you for who you are. Amen.